Adoption Arena Podcast is a positive, engaging look at adoption and fostering, presented by Joy Carter, an adoptee and advocate.
Hello, you're listening to the first season of the Adoption Arena Podcast, hosted by me, Joy Carter. On today's show, we're discussing Chosen? A new anthology of writing by adopted young people, a project designed and produced by Charlotte Ansell and Janet Plummer. I'm also excited to have one of the young people with me today as well, Estelle. Welcome to the show, ladies. How are you doing?
Thanks ever so much for having us on, Joy. It's really nice to be here and be able to talk about the project. Yeah, so how it came about was I was working for PAC UK. I'm a child and family therapist there, so working with adoptive families, parents and children. And I thought it would be really nice to do something with young people and thinking about their experience of adoption. So what happened was Janet and I put in an application to the Royal Society of Literature. They have a scheme every year for their Literature Matters Awards. So we put in a bid for some funding to run some creative writing workshops and from that to put together an anthology. And we were successful with that bid, which was great. And that's basically how the project came about. And so we had sort of financial support and other support from the Royal Society, and also PAC UK have supported us with it as well.
Janet, brilliant. If I can just come to you, if you can share a little bit about your background and how you got involved with the project as well.
Yeah. So I've known Charlotte for quite a number of years, and we've been collaborating on writing projects and also theatre projects as well. And I have also been a foster carer and worked within the world of fostering, and came to adoption via some of the children and young people that have lived with me or I've helped to raise that then moved on to adoption. And the focus of this project is firmly adoption. And every now and then I have to be drawn back from the focus on a little bit of fostering, but fostering does precede most of the time adoption. So it's a part of the experience, but the focus is firmly on adoption and what happens thereafter. But I'm just really excited to be involved in this project. I had been involved in a therapeutic program, the Pellin Institute's therapeutic program, with a national fostering agency. And there are hopes that hopefully the young people that then get adopted can continue with that program should they choose to, whether it's the residential program in Italy or whether it's here in the UK, the residential programs. But I'm really excited to be part of this.
Wow, that's really exciting. And I come to you, Estelle, looking very lovely this evening. So how did you, tell us a little bit about your background or what you feel you would like to share as a young person, and then how you got involved with this amazing project?
Well, my uncle actually found this for me, and he thought that it would be good for me because I'm not a very confident person when it comes to my writing, but he thought that it would be good for me to come and share my love for writing and my personal experience with adoption, to put it into one and share it with people that have kind of gone through the same thing as me, which is really helpful for me because it just makes it a whole lot easier to speak about the problems that kind of exist there. But then there are also lots of positives about it. So really it's just something that's helped me with my writing and has helped me grow to be more confident with my writing and in myself. And
it's because I'm still assuming that you're still at school. Still at school. So that's a real challenging situation, I guess, to actually. And were you able to share any of this with some of your friends,
None of my friends at school are actually adopted. None of them have any kind of connection to anything about fostering or adoption. So it's hard to share things with them, and they don't really understand where I'm coming from with some of this stuff. So if I have other people to talk to about it, then it's easier.
Brilliant. So are you still being fostered, or are you adopted, or where are you sort of in that situation?
I'm adopted. and but I don't live with half of my siblings. So three of them I don't actually live with, but then I have two of them that actually live with me. So
brilliant. So I think I just want to go straight in with your poem, because I really strongly believe that it's the power of the adoptee voice, the power of the, you know, of young people that really, really needs to resonate, I believe, in people's hearts. So I think we should just dive straight in, if you're ready, to share your poem that you wrote. And then we can just sort of use that as a sort of base to find out a little bit more about the writing process and everything. So yeah. Now, take it away.
I am from Wales. I am a rugby player. I'm a best friend. I'm a feminist. And I'm an eco-world supporter, especially for the ocean. I'm odd but colourful, brave but shy. I can be free but still feel locked up. But who I am for a reason. I doubt myself when I should be more confident. I'm the person I am and I cannot change that. I was not myself. I hid away. I never showed my true colours. I copied others to be liked. I was scared. I hope that I can find a life I enjoy, find friends I love, find my birth mom. I hope to be happy.
Wow, there's a lot of emotions in there. Thank you so much for sharing that. Let me just go to you, Charlotte, and talk about finding these young people. You know, obviously, once you've got your funding and everything secured, how did that process start?
Well, as I said, we had the support from PAC, so we asked them to send information out in a mail out to all the families that are on their lists. But we also put information out via some of the adoption agencies, and I think was it Adoption UK? Sorry, I can't remember. But we put information out as widely as we could, and we put it on social media, on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and asked people to share. So, you know, just hoping that we would reach young people and that they'd want to get involved. Obviously, this year, like with everything, it was affected by COVID. So our creative writing workshops, we wanted to do face to face and all meet up, but we couldn't. We had to run them online. And I think that probably stopped some young people coming forward. So we ended up having quite a small group for the workshops. But in a way, that was really nice because it was sort of more intimate then, and it meant there was more chance to talk. And maybe, I don't know, Estelle could probably answer about this, but maybe it felt easier to sort of speak up because it wasn't too big a group.
Yeah, it did help a lot, because then you're not having to kind of share your emotions with like a wide group of people. It's just a lot easier.
Because in that poem, you know, which is really beautiful and really grabs you, I mean, you talk about very much about your identity, you know, and having to put on a face and stuff. I mean, do you still feel, I mean, how do you feel about it now? I mean, you know, obviously before you started the project, do you think you've changed since you actually started to actually write down your emotions in poetry?
Yeah, I think I have changed like a little bit. I've learned to accept myself more. And not be like so, like not to neglect myself in a way, like to just feel okay with the person I am, and that even if other people don't like it, then it's me that has to like it.
Yeah. How did you feel when you first met other adoptees for the first time? Because I know how I felt as an adult, and it was actually quite horrific. I just remember thinking, there's so many people here who got my story and sound like me, and I just felt I wasn't alone. How did you feel when you first had those conversations?
It felt strange at first, because I mean, none of my friends now, except from one, are adopted, and from my experience with her, she's always been quite out there about it and would sometimes use it as an excuse for her behavior. But then with the people that I've like met during this course, it's like different to that. It felt like we were all kind of on the same page about it, and that we didn't want to be like overly out there about it, but then we did want to share it and like raise awareness. So like, it is a really good thing, but it can also be like a really hard thing at the same time.
Yeah, it's very, very different. I mean, Janet, when you started the project with all the young people, were you amazed at the quality and the standard of writing?
we were, particularly the young people that went, oh, I'm no good at it, I can't do it, I can't, you know, I don't think. And then they would come out with something really amazing, or, you know, the language or the way they express themselves. So we were just really pleasantly surprised. And also when we asked for the open call submissions that anyone could send in for as well, the quality of some of that work was really very strong. And yeah, we were really pleased. But in terms of, for some of us as adult writers, and we might have started writing years ago, not everybody wants to open up about the stuff that really matters to them, or their personal situations, or about their families. It's very, very personal. So to be able to trust people with your writing and with your work is a really, really important thing. So it's a real depth of maturity to be able to do that, to open and share and expose yourself almost.
I mean, coming back to you, Estelle, what do you feel you'd like to say to the people reading this, you know, reading your poems and everyone else's? I mean, you know, obviously some people maybe like are thinking of adopting a child. You know, what would you like them to really get from this book, you know, from this anthology?
I really just want them to understand that adoption isn't something that is like bad, because some people interpret it as you've like been taken away from your real parents and you've been taken away from all the things you should have grown up with. But really all it is giving you, the child, a better life and something that can help you in your later life. Because I feel like if people think that you should be kept in that environment, then they're very wrong, because some of the environments are like horrific. They're like really bad, and it's not a place where a child should be kept. So they just, I want them to understand that, you know, all of our stories are going to be different, but it all comes back to the same thing of us like just getting the love that like we deserve and like what we need.
Do you have any memories of being with your biological parents?
No, I have pictures. Very few though. It's hard to find pictures though, because I'm not allowed contact with them, of course. We used to get a letter every year. My mom wrote about 4 times to us, and my dad wrote once, and then they just kind of stopped writing to us. And so I don't really have a connection with them at all. I have like 2 photos and that's all, yeah. So.
Do you wish, I mean, you sort of hinted in the poem that you would like in a later stage to talk to them. Is that something which you still feel is quite important for you in your life journey?
It's important to me, because I want to learn about like why it happened and how they felt about it. And like, I just want to get to know that side of my family so that I can have a connection with them. Even if I'm not with them all the time, it's still a connection that I would like to have, because obviously they're my parents. And yeah, I do care for them, even if like my other siblings don't. They really dislike the whole thing. But I just want everyone to like, on all my family now, to realize that like, that's something that I want. It's something that I feel strongly about.
Yeah, it's very difficult, isn't it? Because I mean, even I remember the title of your anthology was difficult to choose, wasn't it? Because I'm just looking at the title, Chosen. Now you put a question mark. You put a question mark next to it. Why is that, Estelle? You know, why did you all opt for the Chosen question mark?
Because, well, sometimes you feel like you've been chosen for that this is like the life that you should be going down, and that is what is best for you. But whilst other people might not feel that way about it, other like people who have been adopted may feel like they don't want this life, that they haven't been put into the right type of life, that they want to be with their like real parents, even though that I don't like to call them real parents or anything, because yeah, but they feel that's my like birth parents, so I deserve to be with them. So they don't feel like they're in the right situation, so they don't feel chosen whilst some people do.
This section in all our podcasts is to say a special thank you to our sponsors and highlight events that are going on in the adoption and fostering community that you are doing. Why not contact us for more information about advertising your event or sponsoring Adoption Arena? Just send an email to hello@adoptionarena.com. Many thanks. Let's get back to the episode.
Yes, it's a very difficult place, isn't it? Everyone's in very difficult places with their adoption story. And that's one thing that I'm really, really big on is, and to say to social workers especially, every single child is unique. There is no cut and paste. There is no tick boxes of this, you know, you should be speeding this, you should be thinking that. I was adopted, for example, I was found in Nigeria next to my dead twin. I was born into the Biafran War. I was picked up and taken to the hospital along with 50 other babies. And at the time, my parents had been working out there as missionaries. They felt they wanted to help someone. So they went to the hospital. And out of 50 babies, they handed them me. So I wasn't very well, as you can imagine. You can't just put a child down and, you know, I was dying of pneumonia. But I remember my dad said, even if we only have this child for a couple of weeks, we believe life is worth it. And obviously I made it, you know, through that love and support. But I always knew I had a twin that didn't make it. So I know the loss that you have, and that's what we call the grateful syndrome. You know, one side of you is really happy to be adopted, isn't it? But then the other side of you, you've lost so much at the same time. And you can't explain that feeling, that duality. Yeah. I mean, Janet, how do you think the young people have dealt with that duality, you know, of going, you know, is there quite a lot of angry voices in the anthology?
I think people process it in different ways. And I definitely saw a little bit of a difference with some of the younger people and how they were experiencing this, you know, 13, 14, 15. There definitely was a difference in the open submissions for the 16, 17 year olds and the 18 year olds who did that open submission and also maybe hadn't met us as well and hadn't got a relationship with a group of young people. But I think there was a little bit of to-ing and fro-ing on Twitter about Chosen and the title. We went to our young people, we were very transparent, we said, look, this is a thing, this is an issue, it's your project, you choose what title you want. We gave them the choice and this is the choice that they came up to. Whereas online, a lot of the older adoptee voices who had probably come to a different place, mid-20s, 30s, different dynamics in families sometimes happen over a period of time, or perhaps they were more likely to have had some form of reuniting or looking for birth families. And as we know, that doesn't always end well. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. So it was very different having adults telling us or advising us about what we could or should call this project and then going to the young people directly to say, please choose, what title do you want to choose? And that's what they come up with, the contradiction on the end of Chosen, yes, no, good, bad, not sure, Chosen, taken, you know, whatever. It is what it is, but that's what their choice was and we have to respect that.
No, because I was looking at one of the pieces you wrote in the book. I think Charlotte, that you saw that one that somebody wrote on Twitter who'd experienced adoption themselves wrote, it feels like a small plaster over the giant crack that is the trauma of being given up. I mean, obviously, you know, I know, Stan, you're still very much in the process. Do you still feel that crack inside you, that hurt of,
yes,
of loss?
Definitely. I didn't realise it so much when I was younger, but, like, when I went to high school, that's when it kind of really hit me. Like, people would tell me I don't have real parents and that I'm not living, like, a real life and stuff, which that hits hard sometimes. And to be honest, I do realise that I was not in the best position and that this has all benefited me, and it doesn't matter who else this has affected. The social worker's job was to make sure that the children are okay. And personally, yes, there's going to be a lot of trauma there, but you can't just, like, cover it all up. You do have to let it out but then it's just what's best for you. So there is a trauma, but it will get better. So
that's a really positive way of understanding it. I mean, that's so much more than I had when I was your age, because I know that I just couldn't process it. I didn't speak.
I think it might be because I had a lot more insight to it, because I have older siblings. I have a almost 20-year-old brother. I have an 18-year-old brother and a 17-year-old sister that I don't live with. We do not have the best relationship at all. We barely talk. My brother actually ignored me for a year and a half and just kind of left me there. But they've all done that to me. So I've got used to that from them. And obviously that's just their way of coping with all this. But they've told me stuff when I was younger that I don't think I was ready for, which affected me a lot. They told me that my parents were like alcoholics, that they took drugs and all that type of stuff. And being like 8 or 9, you would be like really shocked by all that and you wouldn't like it too much.
Yeah, and you just can't process that. I mean, so are your brothers and, you know, your elder siblings, were they also adopted, or are they, you know?
They're adopted as well, but we
have
two different families. So three of them live with two really, really nice people that they're lovely. And then I live with my parents here. But even though their parents are absolutely lovely, our parents get along fine. We don't get along as much and we don't share the same views about all this. So it's like hard to try and get through to them about my perspective of it all.
Yeah, it's very, very, very difficult to explain. I mean, I think that's one of the big misconceptions about having other family members who are also adopted, is that we're all going to talk about it and chat about it. And they forget it's so complex, isn't it? You just can't process it. I mean, I'm still processing things even today about my culture. And it's very difficult to explain. And I've learned, I mean, is there any advice you'd give adoptees, Estelle, who are maybe not maybe as strong as you are in their journey? You know, is there anything you'd like to say to them who may be listening today?
I feel like they should just carry on just being themselves. Like, it's not, like, no one else matters in what they're going through. They need to focus on themselves. And to some people that might sound really selfish, but it's always your mental health, like your mental well-being. It needs to be about you in these situations, because if you start thinking about other people, what they might think about it and like how they may judge you, then it's going to put you down and then you're going to start thinking badly. So really just focus on the positives about it all. Think about that you're in a much better place now, that it's a lot, lot better, and you have a loving family that will care for you and love you and accept you no matter what. So they just got to think about the positives and not the negatives about it all.
And that's really wise words. That's really beautiful. Thank you so much. Charlotte, can I just come back to you? I mean, you know, obviously we know the system is still, and there's still a lot of work to be done to get things better. What would you like to see happen if there was one thing you could do in the adoption and fostering care system to make things better for families? What would you like to see change?
Well, I really think that if there was more access to therapy and to therapeutic help, and I think that's something Janet and I have both talked about, you know, we wish for that. And, you know, there's just not the resources. There's not enough support. I think a lot of the parents that I work with say that one of the hardest things is not sort of having enough preparation beforehand, or not really knowing what they're taking on. You know, it's quite a difficult process, isn't it, to be assessed as adopted parents. You know, you have to go through a really kind of lengthy and intensive process. But in terms of being prepared to take on a child who has come with trauma, or, you know, from difficult circumstances, and that being a kind of lifetime journey that you're going to take together, I just feel like there needs to be more to help parents prepare for the realities. And you know, like Estelle says, it can be such a positive thing, and there can be so many good things about being adopted, but we have to recognize that there's the difficulties as well, and not sort of gloss over the difficulties, I think.
Yeah, because I think we're all very much aware of sometimes the the organisations who go for the chocolate box, you know, this sort of illusion of this sort of, you know, you're taking on a child and you're saving the world. I mean, how can we maybe get away from that, Janet? You know, how can we maybe, you know, engage better with parents who are potential adopters?
I think lots of people have an idea of what's going to happen, particularly when people are adopting babies. You know, I've got this baby and this is our new life, and they're now, say it's Roberts, they're now a Roberts, and almost trying to forget that there was anything that existed before. But I think sometimes it, for some families, that can work. But I think then there's a lot of hurt when children and young people and adults then go seeking, or just curiosity to find out the what, why, where, for, and what happened, because glossing over doesn't make anything disappear. It's still there. So I think one of the questions you asked, Charlotte, was what would you change or what would be different? And I think what would be different was something to do with transparency and openness in terms of contact. And that's contact with the people that might have been a part of their life that could say, talk, explain. There's only so much a report will tell you. And I'm in the privileged position of having brought up an amazing, amazing human being who then got adopted, and we are still in contact. So I think for that young person and their parents, they're in the situation where they've had continuity throughout their life, and they can come and ask me, well, what happened when he was 6 months or 8 days old? And I know his history, and I know about him. And I think for him, it's a really positive process. For me, it's really been amazing and positive, because not many people get to have that contact. And I think what they've realized is it's really quite crucial, whereas that wasn't necessarily the advice of what everybody would have wanted. And they were advised to have a really long period where that young child didn't see me or my family, whereas that young child, even though they settled really, really well, it's still a confusing period of what's happened to their life before, you know, particularly when children are 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, they know where they lived before, what was familiar in an area, and they want a little bit of either reassurance that they haven't done anything wrong, and that's why they've moved or changed, no matter how amazing their forever family is. And also processing things if that experience before wasn't that good, particularly with people who have been entrusted with their care, you know, the change and the difference. So it's all about helping to process. And I think therapy is part of that. I think it should be an integral part of the arrangement, and it should be a given rather than apply for therapy if you feel there's a problem or an issue. Therapy should be part of the transition and moving on, and just everybody understanding and just that cognizance of what's happening in your life and your family. All families are confusing and sometimes messy, sometimes difficult, much less when you have adoption into the mix.
I mean, just going back to you, Estelle, does that resound, you know, to you and your experience? I mean, do you think that your social workers did enough to help you, even as a child? Do you think they were there enough?
Possibly no. I think I've only ever really seen my social worker properly that I can remember once. And I've had no other contacts, nothing. It's mostly been my parents in contact, which I don't think is fair in a way on the child, because, you know, I want to have contact with my social workers. I want to have contact with like people who could help me out, and just like those doors of like being shut in a way, and it's just like there's no way of me being able personally to get in contact with them, because you can't really get in contact. But I mean, yeah, that's like the social services choice to do that, and if they think it would be best, then like I respect that.
See, that's really shocking, isn't it? Because that is a right, you know, you have a voice, and that's one thing I think has been so left out for me about the whole adoption process is you know we've forgotten that the child is a person who will become an adult, and to shut out their voice as though they don't matter, it's not like getting a chair, is it, or a table, you know. it just doesn't work like that, because you have a memory.
Yeah, and I understand, even though we're a child, like we'll they expect us to say, but I don't want like a new family. I want to go back to like my old family or something. But genuinely, I think we like when we get to the ages of like 5 or 6, we do have an understanding of it. We do know what is going on. We know that we have been not necessarily taken away from your family. You've just been given to a new family to look after you for a while, in a way. That's like how I feel like it was explained to me when I was little. So it was like really confusing at the time. I remember being really confused about it all. And then I just kind of got used to it, and it kind of just went in with my everyday kind of flow. And it was fine until, you know, like high school, when people would all notice that type of stuff, how you wouldn't know anything about your parents. And people would pick on you about it. They would say you don't have any real parents, or you're just like odd because this has happened to you. But it's never the child's fault. Even if the child feels like it's their fault, I don't think that anyone should ever blame the child, because the child might personally be thinking that. And if you tell them that, that it will just like confirm it, and they will just feel wretched about it and will like feel bad. And it's just not a good thing for them.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear the second part of the interview, then please tune in next week, when Estelle shares more about her writing and how being adopted has affected her family relationships, learning and school life, plus even more about this amazing and exciting project. You take care. Bye-bye. Adoption Arena podcast is brought to you in conjunction with AdoptionArena.com. It's aimed at those interested in or affected by adoption, fostering and care issues. Join us as we discuss the big issues and topics in the arena that might affect you. We would love for you to support our work at Patreon. Go to Adoption Arena and receive exclusive interviews, listen to seminars and training, and be invited to our live Zoom meetings and events. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Joy Carter, and I look forward to hearing from you with any feedback, suggestions, and questions. Adoption Arena, a sound pathway to a great future.